We turn now to a story about military interrogations and the way they were conducted in the first days and weeks after the 9/11 attacks. What happened later, things like the torture memos and waterboarding, has been well documented. What happened before is less well known. NPR's Dina Temple-Raston has this story of one early interrogator's experience and how his team decided to test the limits.
Christopher Mackey is a pseudonym for a highly trained Army interrogator. He arrived in Afghanistan in December 2001, just 3 months after the September 11th attacks.
I remember very clearly you could smell this burning plastic everywhere. It smelled as though some kind of a toy factory had melted down. Now it was just really kind of otherworldly.
Mackey's experience is important because he was there at the beginning. He was not just a witness, but a participant in tinkering with interrogation techniques that could work against a new kind of enemy. When Mackey attended advanced interrogation schools, he was taught methods more suitable for the Cold War. For example, it was typical to offer resettlement in the West as a trade for information. Now, that ploy worked in the Eastern Bloc, but didn't really work with religiously motivated al-Qaeda detainees.
We felt that a lot of the skills that we had been taught, although very, very useful when they were adapted, didn't in the first instance apply very well.
That's why Mackey and the interrogators working with him ended up having to, in his words, adapt. And while the intention was always to follow the Army Field Manual and the Geneva Conventions to the letter, that's not exactly what happened.
We noticed that in the course of our interrogations, the longer the interrogation went and the more fatigue that could be induced in a prisoner during those talks, the more likely he was to be able to share information.
The interrogators in Mackey's unit knew they couldn't subject detainees to full-scale sleep deprivation. That was against the rules. So they came up with something they thought was as far as they could go.
That idea was that if you kept a prisoner up and then fastidiously insisted that the interrogator likewise be kept up, it would be hard for a critic to come in and say that we were being harder on the prisoners than we were our own soldiers.
They called the technique monstering, and it was essentially sleep deprivation with a loophole. They called it that because at the time, they couldn't imagine doing anything worse to a prisoner without violating the Army Field Manual and ending up in trouble themselves. Mackey said the technique worked.
We certainly had the best results when we had to get immediate actionable intelligence for the battlefield commander when we engaged in this concept of monstering. Although we used it only on a handful of occasions, there was no doubt that the information that we had had a value that was unique to that approach.
After about 8 months in Afghanistan, Mackey's team was replaced by other soldiers in their reserve unit. The new interrogators were given a list of techniques, a history of what worked and what didn't. Included in that list was monstering. Mackey says that for his unit, the technique was the ceiling, as far as they would go. But for the next group, it became their starting point.
As the situation in Afghanistan became more and more difficult, they used that approach more frequently than we did, and then instead of making it a special thing for special circumstances, rolled it into just one of the approaches that they would take where they thought it was necessary.
Mackey says he's torn about his unit's brand of sleep deprivation. He says it helped get key intelligence for the battlefield, but he says he can't help feeling that it contributed to the escalation of increasingly harsh interrogation techniques.
I would hate to say that I'd want to undo the advantages that we gave to the combat troops we supported by taking back monstering as an approach. If we look at it in the context of monstering having started some sort of downward spiral, then I would say I think that its usefulness would have to be questioned, and I suppose if I had to do it again, I wouldn't.
Mackey left Afghanistan in August 2002. What he couldn't have known is that was precisely when the Department of Justice issued a series of memos, the so-called torture memos, that permitted interrogation measures that went far beyond what Mackey's team ever contemplated doing. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR News.